Hey guys, welcome to episode 58 of NBA Unwrapped. Today's just a solo episode with yours truly, Christian, and I have a very special guest on today to talk some Wizards basketball. Before we hop into everything, I just want you guys to give us a follow on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can also follow my personal page at McGowan75. You can also give the network a follow at Unwrapped Sports. On the network page, we post all of our articles, and it's kind of the hub for all the central things that we got going on Unwrapped Sports. As well, this episode is brought to you by Sportscaster and by Yamble. Sportscaster is a live streaming app that we will be doing a major, major sponsorship with in the month of September. Yamble, as well, we've done major sponsorships with in the past, but we will be starting again with the NFL season. So all of those who participated with us last year and made some money, get ready because the NFL season is going to be just the same. Today, I got a very special guest from NBC, Chase Hughes from NBCS Sports. Hey, Chase, if you just want to give a quick plug for yourself and say hi to the fans.
Yeah, hello, listeners out there. First of all, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, a little bit about me. I cover the Wizards for NBCSportsWashington.com. Also the NBA a little bit, and I guess covering a team that, you know, on the West Coast, I don't know how much people pay attention to, but basically it's a team in transition. They've got some big-name players, John Wall and Bradley Beal, certainly are kind of going through a bit of a mini-rebuild, a bit of a retool, so it's been a pretty busy summer for me and covering the Wizards.
Yeah, no, as we talked before, we're all Laker fans here, so bad times in the franchise have definitely been in common for both of us. I know now with LeBron, we're in a lot of nicer days. To comment on your point, in Los Angeles, you have so many people from all over. I guarantee there's a lot of Wizards fans here. I remember Perry's at the Dodger game the other night when they played the Yankees, and he told me there was just about as many Yankee fans as there were Dodger fans. And if you're not from LA, you're usually from one of those, you know, outside cities or even another country. It's just a very diverse place here. So always a lot of love for the other teams out here in LA.
Thank you. Also, you know, the Wizards have been kind of a dumping ground for the Lakers.
You're right.
They got Thomas Bryant last summer off waivers. That worked out really well for the Wizards. This summer, obviously, there was the trade that brought Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, and Jamario Jones. So it seems like all these sort of prospects that the Lakers don't have use for at the moment are coming over to the Wizards, and they're hoping that their reclamation projects.
Right, and you guys are kind of in that position almost. I know you cover the Brooklyn Nets too, but where you can just take on those assets, bad assets, and, you know, kind of gain some flexibility because you're just in that position where wins aren't necessarily your priority at this exact point, but gaining young pieces and taking on debt is just a great strategy when you're at your point. And I know Mo Wagner didn't really get the time to shine with us because of LeBron James needing win now players, but I'm really excited to see him on y'all's roster and see how you guys get a crack to develop him, because he was a first round pick, and I love those, you know, four European white guys. They have a soft spot in my heart in terms of the NBA. So I just want to...
You know, last year, and they're hoping it's a similar parallel where, you know, you had Thomas Bryant, who was a big man, 7-footer. Mm-hmm. Had 1 year in L.A., didn't really develop because it was such a short period of time, but he came to Washington, had more of an opportunity to play, and it worked out really well for him. You know, he got a second contract already, a 3-year deal with the Wizards this offseason. So, you know, Mo Wagner's interesting because he was a really good shooter in college at Michigan, and he had some really good workouts with the Wizards last summer to the point where they really wanted to take him in the draft. But they had the 15th overall pick. They couldn't justify taking him that early.
Right, that would have been a reach.
Yeah, they thought maybe he would slip to the second round, and maybe they could buy a pick and get him. But obviously the Lakers picked him late in the first round. And so far his shots just haven't been falling at the NBA level. They didn't fall last year. He couldn't make shots in the summer league with the Wizards this, you know, last month. So I think that'll be a big key for him because, you know, he's supposed to be a 3-point shooter. So the Wizards really like his potential, and, you know, I think he's obviously the prize of that trade that they made with the Lakers. But I think you know, I've heard some really good things about Isaac Bonga and Jamario Jones as well, two guys who, you know, were on the Lakers at the very end of their roster. I don't know how much you guys actually saw of them.
You know, I'm a fan of the summer league, so someone like Isaac Bonga really does excite me because I think he has extremely high ceiling. It's just going to take someone to really take the time to develop him. So, me personally, I'm obviously sad to see people go, you know, but when you're getting Anthony Davis back, you know, it kind of helps. But, but you know, he was definitely someone that all three of us, Perry Corbin and I, were very high on. Well, he was out of France. I can't remember what exact country he was out of, but he was super young getting into the NBA. I mean, sky's the limit for him in the sense that he's already in the league. And if, you know, the Wizards are willing to put in the time, same thing with Mo Wagner. These are the kind of guys, and you guys are in that position where you are fortunate to have the time to sit and develop someone like this.
Yeah, Bonga's only 19 years old. You know, he's 6'8", 6'9", point guard. He's really, really big for his position, really athletic. Jamario Jones, the third guy that, you know, the Wizards got in that trade, he's a personal favorite of mine just because of the numbers. If you go back to college and what he's done in his brief time in the NBA, he's only 6'5", but is, like, unbelievable at rebounding. He averaged, like, 12 or 13 rebounds a game in college at that size. And I know last year only played, like, 5 or 6 games for the Lakers, but had back-to-back games of 15 rebounds or more. Yeah. And then we saw him in the summer league just briefly, but he'll go out and in, like, 10 minutes get 8 rebounds. So, like, if you're 6'5", wow, and you're getting rebounds like that at right, that level,
you're hustling.
You're hustling. Right. Yeah, so I really like that. And he actually went to the alma mater, New Mexico State. New Wizards GM, Tommy Shepard. So there's a nice little story there. But, yeah, you know, one last thing I could kind of compare the Wizards to the Lakers is obviously it's an extreme example because the Lakers had number 2 overall picks in Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. But, you know, I think the Wizards' best-case scenario is to have some of these young guys. You know, we talked about the ones they got from the Lakers, but other guys like Rui Hachimura, their first-round pick, Troy Brown Jr., their first-round pick last year. Some of these guys develop into the point where they're trade assets, mm-hmm, and, you know, they flash some upside like a lot of guys on the Lakers did, and you can turn that around and maybe package it for an all-star. Now, you know, right, you're not going to be able to trade for someone as good as Anthony Davis, but the best chance for the Wizards to get somebody, you know, of all-star level is to trade for them because, you know, it's not quite like the Lakers in terms of a free agent destination, I would say. Yeah.
But D.C. is still a great city. I mean, no knocks against them. It's not New Orleans. No shade on them. But
which, by the way, I don't get how New Orleans isn't more of a free agent destination. But I've asked some of my friends who are former NBA players who are in the sportscasting ranks, and they say that, you know, it's a fun place to visit, but not necessarily to live.
No, 100%. So I actually used to live about 45 minutes northwest of New Orleans. It's where I went to college. I played football at a school called Southeastern Louisiana. They're Division I AA. So I spent a lot of time out there, and that's so true. It's a very fun, you know, it's kind of like Vegas where it has that, you know, has that sin factor where you can go out and drink and do all these things that you can't do in a normal city. But it's not like like Los Angeles or Boston where there's a true like suburb for people of that certain wealth level that you'd want to live. So you can live in a very high-rise apartment in New Orleans. They're not devoid of that. They're just not really, you know, like a suburb that you can live in that's not over an hour away from the city, because New Orleans is surrounded by water. It's right there in the bay. That's kind of, you know, with Katrina, they had all those problems. And the same kind of thing from if you're from the West Coast or you're from another area too, it's a giant culture shock. The summers are horrible. February's with Mardi Gras and hurricanes are just completely out of this world. So I understand why other people might find New Orleans specifically a little bit of a kind of a quagmire in terms of, you know, you go there and you visit and you're like, oh, why would you not love to live here? But that does, yeah, I mean, you know, that does
get old. Because it seems like it's a pretty good sports city with the way they've rallied.
Oh, it is.
The Saints. They love it. Has the potential to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just a city I've never been to, but it's kind of a top of my list of places I'd like to go. But once I threw that to some of my friends who played in the NBA, they were like, yeah, no, you don't want to play there.
No, I get it. And, you know, I'll be so thankful in 5 years when Zion forces his way out and wants to come to the palm trees of LA. So I just
went for the Clippers.
Oh, I wouldn't blame him, honestly. I would be happy if Bomber bought the Lakers. Don't even get me started on the Clippers. They did a good job. But I just want to double back real quick. You talk on the Nationals on the Racing Presidents podcast. Now, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I love the Racing Presidents event that the Nationals do. So I just want
to
just...
I thought you were about to say you love the podcast. I was like, wow.
No, I do love... I do. Don't, well, I haven't listened to your podcast since I was a little kid. But watching them run around, that just on the outline just caught my eye. So I just want to give you just a quick moment to shout out your podcast and kind of talk about that.
Yeah. So yeah, we do a podcast on the Washington Nationals. If there's any fans out there who listen to the show, like the NBA, who also like the Nationals, you know, feel free to download the podcast. But yeah, the Nats, man. I don't know if you follow the Dodgers out there, but it seems like those two teams might be on a collision course to meet in the playoffs. The Dodgers obviously look like the class of the National League, but the Nats, you know, in late May, they were 12 games under 500, but since it's been about half a season, they've played at over 100-win pace. And I think if you look at the National League, probably look at the Dodgers as the team to beat, but the Nationals is the team that no one wants to see. No, so DC and LA may score. You know, they played in the playoffs a few years ago, and they may square off again. With some pretty high stakes in October.
No, that'd be fun. So I, in terms of baseball, I call myself like the fair weather fan. So I start rooting right around the playoffs, just because I love football and basketball so intensely. That's what I had played in high school and college. So I was never, if I was good at baseball, I would have played it in high school. I wasn't as coordinated hitting the ball as I was shooting the ball. I wish maybe one day I will you know, sit down with some of our contributors from baseball and have you guys immerse me in the world and finally get cultured on America's game.
Well, you know, I think if there was ever a time, if you lived in the LA area, to get into baseball, this would be it, man. You got the Angels and the Dodgers. The Dodgers is just unbelievably good. And then you've got Mike Trout, who might end up going down as the GOAT, man. He's like a Michael Jordan type figure in his prime.
No, you're right. No, you're right. I'm just a little bit worried that we're going to turn into the Buffalo Bills of the MLB, where we go three straight years and lose. That yeah, terrifies me.
Yeah. No, it's true.
It's a possibility, because we're almost there.
That's a tough thing.
Yeah, we're 2/3 of the way there. So I just want to crack in and see what your predictions are for the Wizards. I know that John Wall put you guys in a pretty sticky situation, signing that extension and then getting hurt basically before that extension really even starts. So you guys are kind of sat there with his contract with a ruptured Achilles. I read a report from the owner saying that he might miss all of next season as well. So I just wanted to see what your predictions were in terms of win-loss. Also wanted to see what your opinions were on if they should move Bradley Beal or what pieces should be moved.
Yeah, well, when it comes to the John Wall injury, you know, I think it's impossible to overstate how big of a burden it is for the Wizards. You know, if you look at his contract and the nature of the injury and the type of player he is, a point guard whose game is predicated on speed,
right,
the fact he's going to be making 35% of the salary cap next year in the first year of a Supermax contract, and the fact that an Achilles injury, you know, is kind of up there, is the most ominous injury you can have.
Right.
You know, it's certainly supplanted ACL. The recovery rate of ACL is so much higher at this point that it doesn't have the same stigma. Achilles still kind of has that, because we saw what it did to Kobe Bryant, Elton Brand, and Patrick Ewing, and Isaiah Thomas, and all these guys who were not the same players after it. And we've seen, you know, DeMarcus Cousins have it recently, and obviously Kevin Durant, who just recently suffered it. It's a really tough situation for the Wizards to be in. You know, I've written that I think it might be one of the most difficult roster building obstacles in NBA history.
No, I agree.
And the reason I say that is because it's the Supermax contract is a very new thing. Guys haven't made this much money. They haven't made this percentage of the salary cap to this degree before. And you've got a guy who's about to start the contract on that injury. So it's really, really tough. And the Wizards are going to have to work around it and have clearly changed their priorities since that injury. You know, soon after he suffered that injury, which, by the way, he's already done for the season with heel surgery, recovering from bone spur removal in his heel. And he fell in his house and ruptures Achilles. So this was an accident. This wasn't even like on the floor like Kevin Durant was. This wasn't like trying to push through it. This was a complete accident.
Right.
At least as the story goes.
Right.
Of course, obviously there's some conspiracy theories out there, but
no doubt. I could see him like maybe like trying to reach for something on the top shelf and then like slipping.
Well, he's a tall guy. He is 6'4".
You're right.
But he's probably got tall shelves.
Yeah, he has a nice house, high ceilings, yeah. Open concept.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, the Wizards clearly shifted their priorities after that. At the trade deadline, they sold off a bunch of their top earning players. Otto Porter was one of them, to get on the luxury tax. And then this offseason, they haven't been referring to it as a rebuild. They've been referring to it as a retooling and a reset. But basically what they've done is they've let a lot of, paid, in some instances, overpaid veterans leave, like Trevor Ariza, Jeff Green, Bobby Portis, Thomas Satoransky. Those guys are gone. And instead, they flooded their roster with young, cheap players who present some upside. You know, Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, Jamario Jones, they qualify as that. They bought a second-round pick and got Admiral Schofield from Tennessee. They picked Rui Hachimura, 9th overall. They've got Troy Brown Jr. last year, who's the 15th overall pick from Oregon. So now they've got this roster that is basically a rebuilding roster in terms of they've got a ton of guys who are 22 or younger who are basically college-age players. But the one thing that's holding them back from going through a full rebuild is trading Bradley Beal, and they don't seem willing to do that. You know, they've already turned down some teams throughout this offseason. He does have 2 years left on his contract, so it probably won't come to a head really until next summer, as we've seen with NBA stars. Once they get 1 year away from free agency, it's really decision time. You saw the Charlotte Hornets choose not to trade Kemba Walker, and they ended up having to see him leave in free agency. So the Wizards would certainly try to avoid that. They're not at that point, but they, at this point, are intent on keeping Bradley Beal, who is a two-time All-Star, borderline All-NBA player, surrounding him with young players and hoping that some of those guys show promise, so either they can build with them around Bradley Beal or turn around and trade those guys for a proven star to a smaller degree that the Lakers did with Anthony Davis, as I mentioned a little bit earlier.
Now, as you cover them, I just want to tap your vein on this one thing. Is Bradley Beal the type of star who would demand a trade out of Washington, or do you think he's someone who would let his contract run out and then decide, like Kawhi, just to move on to another team?
I think it'd be the latter. You know, I think it would be more similar to the Kemba Walker situation, okay. Unless I'm mistaken. I don't think he ever really made it a dramatic situation where he pouted or asked for a trade or wore a "That's All Folks" Looney Tunes shirt. You know, he was pretty much a model citizen in that regard. And Bradley Beal, I actually talked to him at the All-Star break in a one-on-one interview where he said he would never request a trade. So that's one thing that I think fans can now sort of hold him to. But you don't really have to request a trade to get one. You know, you can kind of just tell the team, like, hey, I'm not signing the contract, so you can do what you want to do. I'll leave in free agency.
Right.
Or just weigh my options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can kind of decide on things. And with him, what's interesting is, like, if you have Kevin Durant, who you know could leave in free agency, but you're going into a year where you have a title chance, then, you know, it might be worth the risk to hold on to him. Sure, you can get a ton, but, you know, a one-year title window is still a title window.
No doubt.
With the Wizards, if they had some uncertainty with Bradley Beal, I have to imagine they would entertain trade ideas because it would probably be malpractice not to. but as I mentioned, I think they've got a year to go. And to answer your question, I think Bradley Beal will say and do all of the right things, especially in the public eye. But that doesn't mean he may not want to get traded or will get traded, because those things, I think, can still happen without a trade request.
No doubt. My last question on the Bradley Beal front is, next summer, do you think there's a chance they use Bradley Beal and package him with John Wall to clear him from the books? Or what do you think is their strategy with John Wall going forward? Are they going to wait for the injury to unfold and see where he's at? Or do you think there's already plans to move him before he comes back?
You know, Ted Leonsis, the owner of the Washington Wizards, is very unusually loyal when it comes to sports owners. I think there are some that show loyalty to star players, and then there's Ted who shows another degree of loyalty. I think this franchise, first of all, prides themselves on being able to keep these guys happy and on second and third contracts. And if you look around the league, they are kind of an anomaly in that regard. Mm-hmm. You know, John Wall and Bradley Beal have both said they want to finish their careers with the Wizards and have gone to extraordinary lengths to say that they want to stay with the Wizards. Like, John Wall said that he doesn't want to play for another team. Bradley Beal literally told Yahoo Sports earlier this year that he wants to die in a Wizards jersey. So, like, it's insane what these guys have said about the Wizards. And, again, it's very, very rare in today's NBA. You look at all the star movement, these guys don't want to move. So that's very, very rare. I think that's one element, is the loyalty and, you know, the proven track record of keeping these guys happy in town, even when other stars might not be happy in those situations. And also, I think there's an element of wanting to win with the people you want to win with. I think Ted Leonsis really likes these guys. And, you know, he likes to tell this anecdote that I think Wizards fans should really listen to, because I think there's a lot of meaning to it. And that is that in 2017, the Washington Capitals, his hockey team, they were coming off a year where they got bounced early in the playoffs. And Alex Ovechkin, I think, was like 32 at the time. And a lot of people were saying, the title window's over. You got to trade this guy. You got to get what you can get for him. You might want to trade Nicholas Backstrom, too, your Hall of Fame center. And he didn't trade them, and they won a Stanley Cup the next year. And wow. He likes to tell people that. He likes to remind people that he didn't listen to them and that he was proven right. And I think there's a chance that he could have the same path with the Wizards. Not win a title, but if they got to the conference finals with John Wall and Bradley Beal as the stars, that would be the first time they've been to the conference final since the 1970s. Wow. I think that would be an opportunity for Ted to say, I told you so,
right.
to a certain extent. Also, the last thing I would say is that in his defense in that regard, John Wall and Bradley Beal, in the context of Wizards history, are already all-time greats. Like, if you were to do an all-time team for the Wizards Bullets franchise, keep in mind, this isn't the Lakers. They would be on that team. They might even be in the starting lineup. So I think he also understands that with Bradley Beal and John Wall, even with the injury, you know, you trade a Bradley Beal, who's arguably the 15th best player in the NBA, it might take you a long time, 10 more years, to find a guy that good. So he knows how rare it is to find guys like this. He wants to keep them, and he wants to win with them in Wizards uniforms.
Right. And Bradley Beal is still relatively young. He's been in the league, what, I think he's going into his 7th year, correct, in the NBA?
I think it's his 8th.
Going into his 8th year. But he came in at 19, so he's very young for the amount of years that he's played in the NBA, where you have someone like Kyle
Kuzma. He's 26.
He's 26, so yeah. Very young for the amount of years he's played, where you have Kyle Kuzma, who's really old and has been in the NBA 2 years, so... Very good to have someone like that. And I think also, too, is a testament to the city. You said they're so happy to be there. That has something to do with the city. It has the franchise, and then also you have to love where you play if you want to say you want to be buried in a Wizards jersey.
Yeah, no, I mean, those guys, they definitely like living in the area. They definitely are very committed to the community. You know, Bradley Beal just won the Community Assist Award at the NBA Awards. As dumb as the NBA Awards are, and I would, you know, I haven't watched them, and I hope to never do it. That award is legit, man. Like, I mean, it's the top community service award in the NBA, and Bradley Beal got it for his work in the DC community, partly for what he's done at a high school in one of the more underserved areas of DC. Wow. John Wall won that award, I think it was 2 years ago. So both of these guys have done so much for the community that they've won the top award in the NBA. I think it goes to show sort of their appreciation for DC. And I can tell they like to live here. You know, they're both raising their young kids here. So certainly the city has something to do with it. The Wizards paying them a lot of money when they've had every opportunity to do so has something to do with it. But you know, the Wizards are able to keep star players happy. Like, say what you want about them, say what you want about their previous GM, Ernie Grunfeld. They have been able to keep their stars happy. Now, the question is it to a fault? Do they coddle their stars? Do they create an environment where there's not enough accountability? I think those questions are fair, but it's hard to argue with their track record of John Wall and Bradley Beal wanting to stay with a franchise that, you know, has done some to help them win, but, you know, they could certainly look elsewhere and think that the grass is greener.
Right. And I think also, too, I don't know if we're necessarily coming out of the super team era, but before last year, it would have been just so easy to be like, hey, let me go team up with someone else and win. You know, now I hope we're in kind of a, you know, maybe like a Batman and Robin era, where there's going to be two superstars on each team, and we're going to see just more depth in the NBA and not just this concentration of three guys on one specific team. Even if that means that my Lakers do not benefit from that, I would just from an unbiased standpoint, would like to see a little more of the stars spread out among the NBA.
No question. I would like to see that too. You know, I have not been a fan of the Warriors era because it was great when they had their original group minus Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, they played LeBron and the Cavaliers, and it was one of the best finals I've ever seen. But as soon as Durant went to the Warriors, it just became, and I know they lost yet last year, but it became the type of thing where you'd go into every season knowing what the end result was going to be, and that just wasn't fun. when it comes to the Wizards, two things on that. One is John Wall and Bradley Beal have also said publicly that they don't like super teams and they wouldn't want to join a team just to get a ring. Now, who knows, once their legacies are on the line and they're in their 30s, how they'll feel about that.
Right.
But these guys have literally like said it in interviews and posted on Instagram and stuff, like making essentially taking shots at the super teams. And also, Ted Leonsis, their owner, you know, one of the reasons why he said that, you know, he wants to keep John Wall and Bradley Beal together. He actually said this at the press conference last month when they introduced their new front office, is that, you know, look around the NBA, and it's not currently it's not an era of super teams where, you know, the top teams in the NBA might have only two stars and then a lot of depth around them. And that's what the Wizards feel like they can sort of reestablish with John Wall and Bradley Beal. Now, the counter to that was when those guys were at their peaks together, you know, 2-3 years ago. It's not like they were losing to super teams in the playoffs. You know, they were getting bounced in the second round by teams that didn't end up going on to win at all. So there's certainly different ways to look at it, but that's part of the Wizards' thinking as they've described it.
Right. And part of building that depth is taking flyers on guys like Mo Wagner and Isaac Bonga and then developing them to be on your bench surrounding your two stars. So I think that you guys might be a little bit closer than other people make you out to be.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. They are in the Eastern Conference. You know, that's one thing that, like, national media type. So I've asked about the Wizards, like, hey, you know, what do you think about them going into next year? And that's usually something people point to. It's still not nearly as deep as the Western Conference. The best player in the East, Kawhi Leonard, left. You know, he went to the Clippers. So certainly there's some very good teams. I think Philly has one of the best starting lineups in the game. But, you know, you might be able to get into the playoffs with a losing record. So the Wizards won 32 games last year. If they could somehow get closer to 40, you know, maybe they could make the playoffs. But right now their Vegas over-under is 28.5. So I don't think the playoffs are, you know, the expectations in the question right now.
Yeah.
But certainly in the Eastern Conference, I feel like at least with those lower seeds, anything can happen.
Right. You never know. If they get 10 more wins and they're at 38, they might be pushing a playoff berth.
Absolutely.
So to move on, also Wizards related, Dwight Howard has now signed with the Los Angeles Lakers. His contract is kind of structured day to day. He gets paid about $14,000 per day starting on October 21st, which when I read that, it's a lot of money per day, don't get me wrong, but it's also not, because you times it out and he's not making as much as the top end guys. But $14,000 a day is still a very, very impressive amount of money. But he's now on the Lakers. He was injured all of last year with you guys. He had that slight, I don't want to say a scandal, but there was the off the court stuff that he had also last season. So I just want to talk about, do you think Dwight Howard's going to be a benefit to the Lakers? I know, like I said, he's coming off of an injury. He does look much skinnier. He looks like he's in good physical shape, but I just want to talk about Dwight Howard's fit on the Lakers, and then also I just want your comments on Dwight Howard as a whole, because I'm someone who, before they signed him again, I hated Dwight Howard. I flipped him off at a Rockets basketball game back in 2015, so I have to now like eat crow. But I just want to get your opinion, because he was that you guys were the last stop on his jersey tour.
Right. Well, yeah, the structure of the contract, the fact that he only played 9 games last year because he had the back surgery. It was the same surgery that he had, you know, years and years ago. I think it was before he went to the Lakers, and just, you know, wasn't the same player. It took him years to kind of get back to full health. It was a very serious injury. So the fact that he's on this contract, he's got that injury, and he's wearing the number 39 I saw today,
right.
It just feels to me like his NBA career is really kind of hanging on by a thread. Like, this is maybe his last opportunity in the NBA. You know, last year with the Wizards, things just never got going. You know, he had the injury before training camp even started, played 9 games, and then sat out for a while, and then had this surgery and, you know, missed the rest of the season. He could have helped the Wizards last year. You know,
he
played 9 games. They went 4-5, much better from a percentage perspective than their 32-50 overall record. And their two biggest problems were defense and rebounding. And, you know, when he was playing, because of the lower back injury, he couldn't jump very high, so he wasn't, you know, blocking very many shots. But he was getting rebounds, and the Wizards this year were, you know, time and time again losing games because of the rebounding margin. You know, at one point, I think they were 10-0 this was late in the year, like in February or March, they were like 10-0 in games where they out-rebounded their opponent. And then, you know, if you do the math on what they were in games where they tied in rebounding or lost the rebounding, and it would have been the worst team in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So rebounding is very important. I have like a new appreciation this year for how rebounding like completes a stop on defense. Like, you force the miss, but it's not a stop until that ball is in your hand and you're starting the fast break. So he was a big loss to them. Also screen setting, because they lost Marcin Gortat, who's one of the best screen setters in basketball. Mm-hmm. Now, when he played for the Wizards, he was effective. He had a game where he had 20-plus rebounds against the Brooklyn Nets. But it's hard to say after this injury what he'll be. Now, I actually saw him in Las Vegas at the Summer League and talked to him for a little bit. And he said that he had lost like 15 to 20 pounds.
It looks good.
You know, I remember before the Wizards traded him to the Grizzlies, one of their assistant coaches was sent down to Atlanta to check him out when he was working out and came back being like, this guy's moving way better than I thought he would be moving.
Right.
Now, this wasn't like their trainer. Mm-hmm. This was one of their assistant coaches who had worked a lot with Dwight during his rehab.
Okay.
And was just very impressed with, like, 6 weeks after the season, the difference between then and what they saw, you know, in early April when they had last seen him toward the end of the season, when they were trying to get him back to return by the end of March, I think it was. So the Wizards, their internal reports were positive on his progress. So, you know, maybe he'll come back to being healthy. You know, the year before the Wizards got him, he was pretty good for the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
More of like a just kind of a locker room problem. And I wonder if that'll be different in LA, because obviously he's not going to be one of the main cogs of the locker room. You know, it's going to be, the structure is certainly going to be led by LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So as long as he can sort of fit in, that'll be fine. But, you know, what has really kind of rubbed people the wrong way over the years about Dwight Howard is that, you know, he doesn't really seem to grasp when things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a fun guy to be around when things are going well, but when things are going wrong, he just, you know, doesn't really seem to have the self-awareness. He's always joking around, and, you know, he's kind of unwilling to change, and we never really saw that here, but you were wondering when that was going to surface. And I guess it was ironic that the Wizards had one of the most dysfunctional locker rooms in all of basketball last year, but Dwight Howard had nothing to do with that.
Right.
So the Wizards can't blame him for their problems, but you wonder if those things will crop back up, because it seems like it's followed him at every turn.
I just have to hope that he's humbled in some degree from going through this. Kind of like how I feel like Carmelo Anthony, I know he has to be humbled being in the position that he's in, being a all-star and then now having no team want you. So I feel like even Dwight Howard can kind of look at someone like Carmelo Anthony and feel somewhat humbled. But I'm hoping
I don't know, man. Some of these guys, like, it's easy. I think it's easy for us, like normal people, to say, but it takes a lot to humble a Dwight Howard or a Carmelo Anthony, or as we saw, like, an Allen Iverson toward the end of his career. Like, it's really tough for these guys to let go of what they understand themselves as, you know, which is just like a superstar.
Right.
And Dwight Howard's not a superstar anymore. Is he going to accept that role? Does he have, you know, Vince Carter, I think, always seemed like a humble superstar. And that trait has really helped him late in his career get a few extra jobs. Dwight Howard's been able to stick around. You know, he's still getting jobs. But can he make it work? Can he get past those things? I don't know, because – you know, the lack of self-awareness, I think, sometimes has hurt him in the past. And, you know, I don't know enough to say whether he's been humbled or if he has changed, because I think it's a lot easier said than done for some of those guys.
No doubt. You saw straight through my Lakers optimism and got right to the root of the situation. So moving on to our next point. The NBA and the Kings have closed investigation of head coach Luke Walton regarding improper behavior, determining there was not enough evidence and sufficient basis to support the allegation made against him. So the report saying that, and obviously when they word it like this, it's not saying, oh, he's 100% not guilty, but they closed the investigation. Obviously he's not being charged. He's not being charged in a court of law. He's not being reprimanded by the NBA. So I'm glad that the Kings get to move forward with their coach. Obviously, I hope nothing did go down and he's getting away with it, but I'm excited to see the Kings move forward with Luke Walton. I didn't like Luke Walton as the head coach of the Lakers, but I think he is a great head coach for a team in the NBA. So kind of glad the Kings get to move past this, but if he did what he was accused of, I hope someday that he ends up serving some sort of justice.
Yeah, you know, that's I think that was pretty much my takeaway from it, is like, you know, the NBA and the Kings seem to clear him of any wrongdoing. I guess she didn't really speak to investigators, the accuser,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you see some of the stuff that were said back and forth by the lawyers, and you just never really know, even when in a case like this where a guy was cleared, you know, who was telling the truth. So right. I guess your hope is that
nothing happened.
Is it nothing happened, and that yeah. the right conclusion was drawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly from the King's perspective, if it went the other way, that could have been a really tough situation for you know, them to deal with, hiring a new coach. So from a basketball perspective, this works out pretty well for them. They can kind of clear this out of the way a month before training camp starts. But you know, you hope for the sake of all parties involved that the truth as they know it kind of surfaced, and that there was no injustice here. I don't know what the status of a lawsuit is, you know, outside of the NBA, but I guess part of it was, you know, they interviewed a bunch of people, but she didn't want to talk because she'd already told her story before.
Right.
And that kind of led to it being insufficient for the NBA and the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
But from a basketball perspective, you know, I am excited to see what the Kings do this year.
No, me too.
I agree that the jury is kind of out on Luke Walton as the head coach at this point. We'll see. But that team is definitely exciting. It, you know, it's like it's one of those teams that we've seen in recent years where they come along in the Western Conference and they look really good, and you just wonder, man, if only they were in the East, they could really make some noise.
No, you're right. They seem almost like, I don't know why I get this feeling, but they're kind of like the Miami football of the NBA. They're just so athletic, and you know, they're not as flashy as the U, but they just have so much speed and athleticism, and you know, you want that in, you know, wide receivers and running backs. But De'Aaron Fox, when I watch him play, I would just love to see him on the Rams with Cooper Kupp and Brandon Cooks just catching passes. But they are a very exciting team. I know Marvin Bagley too is someone that I'm super high on. You know, when he reclassified, that really sped up his timeline as a player getting to the NBA and getting started. But you know, they're young, they're exciting, and like you said, the jury's not really out on Luke Walton, because I think with how dysfunctional the Lakers are, we can kind of give him a mulligan with the Lakers, because who knows what it takes to be successful with us at this point. It's just so poorly ran that I'm not sure if even just letting LeBron run everything is the answer. So
the Kings, you know, they've got to get better defensively. They were just horrible on defense last year, but they push the ball, they could score, and I think De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, like, it might be the best young backcourt in the NBA. Like, I don't know what age you could set, although Buddy Hield's one of those guys who's older than you think.
Yeah.
But I think both those guys have all-star potential. I think Buddy Hield's older than Bradley Beal, I believe.
No, he is, because he played, I want to say he's 28, because he played all 4 years of college.
Yeah, so he's a little bit older than people think, but those guys just are unbelievable. And, you know, I remember when the Kings acquired Buddy Hield in the DeMarcus Cousins trade, a lot of people kind of laughed at their thought that, you know, he could become the next Steph Curry, I think they said. And certainly that was a lofty comparison, but now it sounds a lot less ridiculous than it did at the time, because he's turned into, for where he is at in his career, you know, one of the best three-point shooters of all time in terms of how he started his career through the first 5 years or so. You know, it's up there with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Bradley Beal's one of them, you know, shooting a very high percentage and in a high volume. So he's a legitimate, you know, one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA, and he's got a really good point guard in De'Aaron Fox running with him.
Yeah, I know. He just started hosing down since he's been on the Kings. I know he was efficient with the Pelicans, but I'm glad he's getting the PT with the Kings to see him really develop. So talking about another young player, Nets guard Chris LeVert has agreed to a 3-year, $52.5 million extension. He also signed the extension on his 25th birthday, and he had a cool little video that went along with it. But his stats, he's currently averaging 13.7 points, 3.8 assists, 3.8 assists, 3.9 rebounds. So basically 13.5, 4-4. So pretty good stat line with the Nets. I think he has a little bit more of his ceiling to reach at 25. You'd like to see someone, you think that they're gaining right into their prime. So not saying that he got overpaid a little bit too much, but he's a good guy, and I really think that next year he can take another step forward, because he's only been in the league a couple of years, and he's steadily progressed each year he's been in the league. So I'm really excited, not only for the Nets, but for Chris LeVert. I think that he's going to have an opportunity to really step up his game with more talent around him, and I think the Nets are just going to be the Browns of the NBA in the sense that they were really bad and now they're really good all of a sudden, and they kind of have all this hype around their team. So just want to get your opinion on the number that he got signed at and then Chris LeVert as a player.
Well, first of all, signing a $52 million contract on your 25th birthday sounds awesome.
Right.
What, I agree. What a day. What a life. What a day. But I've liked him a lot. You know, last year I was really happy to see him kind of break out before he had the dislocated ankle. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought he had all-star potential, and then it was a pretty serious injury. And, you know, it's good to see the Brooklyn Nets stick with him when a lot of these teams that have fallen into some superstars, like they did this offseason, getting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, have kind of jettisoned some of the players that they've been developing. But he's a guy that they saw as worth the money, and I don't blame them. You know, he's only played 3 years in the league. You mentioned last year averaging about 18 points a game. You know, LeVert, what I like about him is he's one of those guys on the Brooklyn Nets that has completely exceeded where they drafted him.
Not
and basically, the way they got to this point is they had to overcome a roster-building obstacle that was even worse than what the Wizards are going to have to go through. And that, of course, is the trade they made with the Boston Celtics that sent them all those first-round picks, the picks that, you know, conveyed to the number one pick that the Celtics had and traded for Jason Tatum. It conveyed to the number three overall pick where they got Jaylen Brown. Some big time draft picks they lost in that trade, the Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett trade. So while dealing with that obstacle, they had to do things the hard way. They had to maximize whatever resources they had. And what they did is they hit on second round picks. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, I believe, was a second round pick. Joe Harris was a free agent signing, but he was a former second round pick. Jared Allen, I think they picked 21st or 22nd overall. Big man, really good shot blocking.
Yeah, he's a blocking machine.
That was actually the draft pick the Wizards sent them in 2017 for Bojan Bogdanović. It was a first-round pick. They picked him late in the first round. He's really been good. And LeVert, I think, was the 20th overall pick. They got him in a trade. They sent Thaddeus Young to the Pacers and got LeVert. So he's just one of those guys that they've been able to build this core of really good young players and did it without any top five picks. Like, nothing fell into their lap. They didn't tank and get the number one overall pick and all of a sudden have a great player. Like, they had to really, really do their due diligence scouting and finding these guys, and he's one of them. So it's nice to see a sort of diamond in the rough earn that money, and it's nice to see the Nets reward him. You know, LeVert is the type of success story that the Wizards are going to have to figure out and find themselves. You know, they're in a situation where they're probably not going to be very good next year, yet their payroll's still really high. And they've got Bradley Beal on a max contract. They've got John Wall on a supermax contract. They're going to have to maximize whatever opportunities and resources they have to find good players. So if they have a late first-round pick, they got to make it count like the Nets did with LeVert. So that's really the model team that I've pointed to, the Nets. What they did to overcome that trade and actually come out of it on in maybe a better position than the Boston Celtics are, which is unbelievable.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, the Wizards need to follow that model and find some diamonds in the rough, just like LeVert and the Nets did.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're rebuilding, scouting is going to be a huge part of getting yourself back. And to get underneath some of those contracts, you kind of have to, if you're going to trade to get rid of the contracts, you have to generate assets that people will want to take that asset with. And going back to the Nets, the only real top draft pick they got was kind of D'Angelo Russell in the Timothy Mozgov trade, because he was the number two pick. And, you know, we ended up getting, that pick ended up becoming Kyle Kuzma, which was good for us, but can't really predict that at the time. So say they had retained D'Angelo Russell, that would have been the only guy that was a top draft pick that they had. So, and I know I had mentioned earlier that taking on bad assets to gain more assets and draft picks is a model I think that would be beneficial for you guys. I know you have the pretty stocked out payroll, so I'm not quite sure. I know Corbin's our financial cap wizard, so and I probably don't have too much room to take on bad assets, but if you do gain some flexibility, I think that that is a strategy that could help you out as well. So moving on to our last topic, we have a little Team USA update. Kyle Kuzma has injured his ankle and has dropped out of the Team USA. I know they had lost to Australia a couple days back. They have a game on the 1st against the Czech Republic. Just wanted to tap your vein and see how you felt about Team USA. To me, it's been a little bit of an embarrassment just from the media coverage on how many people have dropped out. It just makes us look bad on how much coverage of people dropping out, how often it's been. I feel like that's just been the worst takeaway for me. I understand if we're not sending our best guys out that we're not winning, but I just think that the coverage of how many people dropping out is just making it look worse than it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's we'll see how they do ultimately, but at this point I think it's setting up to be pretty embarrassing. And I think to be, even though it's not the Olympics, to be one of those years of international play where they're is like a necessary recorrection, because USA has the best basketball in the world, but it doesn't seem like we're putting out the best team. Now, it may end up still being the best team, and that might be a testament to, you know, how good our country is at that sport, but it's just ridiculous. Like, when I saw, like, Montrezl Harrell had dropped out, like, I like Montrezl Harrell a lot. Like, he's a really good player. He's one of the most underrated players in the game. But he has no business even having a chance to be on the roster.
Right.
And for him to back out is just embarrassing. It's like, how did Team USA get to this point where it's so uncool to play for it? Like, I think that's got to be part of it. Like, obviously, the travel's got to be a consideration. You know, you got to go all the way to Asia. It's right before training camp, and there's guys who made plans. And you know, once all of these stars dropped out, I think there were a lot of people who just didn't plan to be playing basketball at that point. So when you see some of these second and third tier guys, it's like, well, how could they have known at this point in the year they'd be asked to do this? So it's certainly a scheduling problem. But, you know, one thing that I think is unfortunate is when you look at, you know, some stars around the league, and I think like Kemba Walker and Donovan Mitchell are really going to take advantage of this. But like it really could have been the year for someone like a Bradley Beal or, you know, a John Wall if he wasn't hurt. But Bradley Beal, you know, he backed out of it because his second child is being born.
Makes sense.
Sometime in the next few weeks. But if that weren't the case, and that's a completely understandable reason not to go, but if that weren't the case, you know, just think about how he could have built his brand by, you know, maybe leading Team USA in scoring or, you know, being in the starting lineup and making big plays down the stretch. You know, I have so many good memories of watching Team USA basketball. One of my favorite times as a sports fan was the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, just watching, staying up late or waking up early and watching like Kobe Bryant, LeBron James in his prime. Kevin Durant was like just coming around, and it was basically the three best players in the world, you know, just dominating.
That's so early in the morning.
Yeah, and I remember I think it was in 2012. I went and saw an exhibition game at then the Verizon Center in DC, and it was just so awesome watching, you know, LeBron James throw lobs to Kevin Durant. It was just amazing. And you know, that team, Carmelo Anthony was arguably the best player on the 2008 team. We've just fielded so many good teams in the last few Olympics after, you know, once it got to the point where the redeemed team, because they won, I guess, bronze in like 2000 or something like that.
Yeah.
However it went, and, you know, Coach K kind of, you know, got a bunch of good players to play again, and there was some pride in it. It just seems like a little bit of that luster has kind of worn off. Even though it's not the Olympics, you know, once the Olympics come around in Tokyo, I'm sure we'll take care of business, but it's disappointing to see, because I've really enjoyed over the years watching the FIBA tournaments and some of these off-year tournaments where you just see Team USA just obliterate other countries, because you've got, you know, 12 of the like 20 best players in the world playing together and playing team basketball. It can just be so much fun, and I feel like we're missing an opportunity here with the team that they're putting on the court.
Right. I think part of the reason that attributes to people dropping out this specific year, I think, goes to the Golden State Warriors really having disbanded and more teams thinking that they have an opportunity to make a run at the championship. Now, not every person who dropped out is on a contender team, but someone like Montrezl Harrell, I can understand wanting to stay healthy because you have a legitimate shot at winning this year. So that's something that I want to defend some of these players who... I think it's just a different culture in the NBA this year, but when the Olympics do come around, though, I agree with you. I want to see the best of the best play for putting on for our country. You know, I understand your son being born if you want to go see that, but if it's the Olympics and you have a chance to win gold, you know, maybe, you know, just see your son when you come back or so. I know it's kind of hard to ask, but I just feel like when the Olympics come around, there's going to be a certain level of, you know, the buck stops here and it's more serious. I understand. I'm the same way you are. I liked watching the FIBA basketball games too. I love seeing the best of the best play in a somewhat serious setting because the All-Star game really isn't a serious setting and we don't get to see them really play full speed team basketball, and seeing that many good basketball players playing full speed is unbelievable. It's like watching Cirque du Soleil. It's completely beautiful.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's basically like an All-Star game where guys try. You know, right. I remember in 2008, they had to beat Spain in the final game, and Spain was really good. Like, they had Pau Gasol and
Marcus Gasol.
You know, Marcus Gasol and Kobe had to hit some big shots, I remember, toward the end of the game. Like, they were actually tested in that final game, and it was just so much fun to watch because you had all just – it was basketball at its highest level. You know, at times, it seemed like it was even better than watching the NBA – like, some of the best NBA finals I've seen because – there were better players on the court than there are in the NBA Finals because it was like basically the all-NBA team just going all out. So,
right.
I hope they get back to what we know this country's capable of in time for when it really counts. But, you know, even in these off years, it can be really fun for sure.
No doubt. And I also don't, you know, like you said, the Achilles injury is something that is... it's just horrible, and Kevin Durant having it at the very end of the season, that can also, I think, carry a stigma into the offseason where players are really just a little bit hesitant to go out there and do things that don't get them paid, because now the ACL is not like a broken bone, but it's not as bad as it used to be. The Achilles is still bad. We have yet to see someone come back and have a Adrian Peterson-esque season where they come back and are actually better than they were before. So I don't necessarily knock these players, but it's gotten to a ridiculous point where it is embarrassing. It is embarrassing to go out there and lose to D-League, G-League guys and guys who would kill to be in the NBA. It's ridiculous, and from some of the videos I've seen, it doesn't really seem like they're taking it too seriously from the guys who are there. So I'm kind of in the boat where I just want it to be over with, and I want to get back to the NBA season and the NFL season and just get back to competitive sports, because I know you love baseball, but this is the time of the year where I'm just every episode of Hard Knocks that comes out, it's like crack cocaine, because it's just like I need that high velocity contact sport right now. That's the boat that I'm in. I know we just did our fantasy football draft, so just, you know, we're right there. Basketball, not so much. We're a little bit away, but, you know, as the days go by, we are getting closer to that tip off. So thank you again, Chase, for coming on the podcast. I just want to thank you again for taking the time to sit with us and talk with us. I know we follow each other on Twitter. I love seeing the stuff that you put out. I am a fan of your podcast, but I will listen to it more intently now that you equipped me on that joke about the running president. So you can follow Chase. No, I get it. You got me. It was funny. You can follow.
I appreciate you having me on.
No problem at all, man. But you can follow Chase on Twitter at Chase Hughes NBCS. If you don't know how to spell, it's at ChaseHughes NBCS. Give him a follow on Twitter. Go listen to his podcast and just like him up. Give him some follows, retweets, and comments. Also, just want to thank our two sponsors, Sportcaster and Yamble. You guys are great. I know Sportscaster next month, we're really going to amp up the promotions that we have planned with you guys. Yamble as well, when football season comes back. I know you guys are yambling away to make some more money on Yamble. I know our co-founder, Corbin, made a good amount of money last season with Yamble. So really excited to get more of our sponsors some spotlight for treating us so well. So thank you guys, and thank you again, Chase, for coming on the podcast. I hope you have a great night, and see you soon.